views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Welcome to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
And we have a guest so nice, we asked him back twice in a row. Kevin Shoemaker.
Hello.
So today we are talking about the games people play.
That's right.
Board games.
Board games. You know, the games you play when you're bored.
Yes. So, you know, if you have a flat surface, you're pretty much set and ready to go.
Well, you know, that and some people. Those are typically the most important part.
Those usually happen, yeah. But, like, you know, when people think board games, they think, you know, like the classics like Monopoly and the Clue and maybe Scrabble if you're...
A lot of Hasbro, Milton Bradley type fare from 50-some-odd years ago.
You know, but things that they base movies on.
Apparently.
But Kevin is a board game aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
Of sorts. I consider myself a bit of a game guru.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's easily it. Now, I don't know what to say. Like, this is a very, you'd think it's a very esoteric, very small topic that, like, you know, who's talking about this sort of thing? But there's a lot of board games there that people would be really interested to find out the different gameplay styles. Am I right?
Yeah. It's interesting because anytime that I talk to someone about board games, you know, because it is one of my primary hobbies, it's one of the things I do, is rather than just sit at home playing video games all day, I do go out and hang out with friends and play board games. It's actually one of my favorite things to do. But every time I introduce the topic, the same question pops up. Oh, do you mean like Monopoly or Risk? And while those are...
You're like, no, I don't want to play Monopoly. I want to have fun.
And I want to keep my friendship.
That's my take on it. But while they are still, you know, perfectly acceptable, fun, fair for families to play and the like, there's been a big trend in the last, I'd say, 20-some-odd years for something called designer games. Back in 1995, there was a game that really hit big over here in the States called Settlers of Catan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a game that was made by a single individual who then got in contact with the producers of whatever manufacturer that he could and produced this game. And that guy's name is Klaus Teuber, and he's a very renowned designer of board games. And when the market realized that there could be sort of a niche in having designers make board games and be credited for it. Because, like, you know, if you look in the instruction manuals of Monopoly and Risk and Stratego, you're not very likely to see the names all big and printed on the box. You might have to dig for who the actual people who designed the games are, because they would mostly, these big companies would take these patents or these ideas, and they would just sort of give a little bit of monetary gain for the individual who made it. And then they would create it as a sort of mass-produced company.
So I feel like there's a biography story of this guy with, you know, slacks go up to his belly button, and he's got like the red bow tie and the garter on his sleeve, and he's like, sir, I got this great amazing game I want to show you.
Well, he actually made it for his kids, but that's an entirely unrelated story. But once it became sort of known that, like, oh, there is a market for these individual designers to sort of go out and make a game and make their own money off of it, board games really started to get more interesting. You know, a lot of the board games of people's youths are a little bit, I feel, if there was a word to describe them, most of them are pretty luck-based.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are rolling dice to move on a board, or they're just kind of very simplistic concepts that don't have a whole lot of depth to them. And that's great because it's very easily approachable, but it's not...
It also translates to boring, too.
It can, most certainly. Especially if you were looking for something with a little bit more...
Interactivity.
Yeah, more interactivity, more, you know, potential to burn your brain in trying to come up with plans and strategies or any of that kind of complex thinking. And modern-day board games are definitely a step above what they used to be, all the predecessors that we had back then. But not everyone knows about them. You know, this is not like the movie industry, where everyone knows the famous directors and producers of various other films. It's really just, it's still a niche product, but there's a lot more going on than you might initially think of for this really small, like board games, this bunch of cardboard and plastic. What's so great and unique about that? But there's actually so many games.
Well, I really like that recently the niche market that you're talking about, you know, these designer games are starting to slowly infiltrate the pop culture. Like, mm-hmm. you go into Target now, and they've got a whole section of these very, you know, very unique, very individualized designer games. And, like, Settlers of Catan now is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And
it was on an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we had a creator of a game on our show last year, the makers of Game Night in a Can, which, while not technically a board game, is still a party game.
It's a home entertainment party game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really nice to see that come into the mainstream. And I really like the fact that designers are being credited now, because I know we've been in the store and we're like, oh, hey, this guy created this game. I know I've liked his games before. Let's give that one a shot.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely opens up the market for people who are interested in it. And I know it sounds kind of silly. You know, what do you want to do? What would you want to do your week, spend your weekend? How would you want to spend that time? Some people might want to go out on a hike. Some people might want to go out on the town and have some drinks. And nobody really thinks that, like, hey, let's all get together and play board games. But the trend of modern board games really lends itself to kind of making that a viable option. There's so many different types of games and so many different things that are available. Like, it's not really just, oh, let's build houses in Monopoly, or let's do like a war game like Risk or Stratego or Battleship, or, you know, something very simplistic but approachable like Life or Mousetrap.
Well, I feel like Life, you know, Mousetrap.
Did you ever actually play Mousetrap?
Oh, yeah, when I was like 6.
Because I never actually played it. I just set it up and set it off. Like, I never actually played the game.
Yeah, the game is not great.
I don't even know what the point of the game is. I just know that I would spend, and, you know, I was little and I had chubby little fingers, so it would take me a while to put it together, and then I'd just set it off, and then I'd be done.
Collect cheese. That's oh, okay. That's the game.
Yeah, I don't recall ever actually having played that game.
But
yeah.
It feels like a lot of those games are very, since they are so simple, they're very juvenile, and there's not a lot of replayability factor with those games. Like, the only time I picture those, it's like, oh, we're going to go to a cabin, we're going to go camping, and there's no electricity, there's no nothing, so this is our only option. Like playing cards is like the grandfather, the caveman of all of that, and then everything's kind of evolved down the line.
Yeah, more or less.
Those old ones are very archaic.
Yes, I personally feel that way, but also that's coming from someone who's been, you know, knee-deep in the hobby for 10-ish years now.
Although I do like how Monopoly adapts, both in the regular standard Monopoly game. You know, now you have credit cards and everything is in the millions of dollars now, because the old Monopoly money, it just, you know, needed to be adjusted for inflation. But I also like that no matter what your thing is, no matter what is your obsession, there is a Monopoly for that.
Yeah, and there's actually
specialty games.
Yeah.
There's a couple of versions of Monopoly that have sort of caught on to some of the more fun trends that have popped up in gaming over the years. Like, I know this is going to sound like a very strange sentence for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, but there's a version of Monopoly where each of the players has a unique power that they can use throughout the course of the game. And it's, I think it's like a tropical island or something, and you're creating resorts. I personally haven't played it, but of all the versions of Monopoly, if you told me I had to play one, it would be that one. But There's so much more than just that. You know, there's games about kaiju, the giant Japanese monsters like Godzilla and Mothra. There's games about superheroes. There's games about little creatures like Redwall, you know, the stories of Redwall fighting.
And not necessarily licensed superheroes. Like, you're not, it's not necessarily a tie-in. There is some, but like the ones you're talking about, I'm assuming, is Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Oh, that's certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's my personal favorite. But there's, I mean, if you can think of a topic or an IP even, there's probably a game for it. Game of Thrones has at least 10 different board games that have come out in the last few years. Marvel and DC both have had different varieties of games come out and that continue to be produced on platforms like Kickstarter.
A lot of deck builders.
Yeah, a lot of deck builders.
Which is a term that some people might not be familiar with. What is a deck builder?
So there was this game that came out, I forget exactly when, called Magic the Gathering. And it was a very popular card game. And one of the things that people liked a lot about it was that you came to the game with a deck of cards that you yourself made. So somebody went, what if I turned that process of making a deck of cards out of all the different options that exist into a game in and of itself? And the sort of grandfather of that game type is called Dominion. And in Dominion, you start with a very small deck of cards, most of which is a kind of currency. And then on your turn, you draw some of those cards, and then you play those cards in order to buy from other cards that are out on the table. And those cards let you do various things, and some of them may stack together, so you might want certain combinations of cards to go into your hand, as you will. But because you start with so very few cards, you're going to run out of them eventually. Well, when you buy a card, it goes into your discard pile, and when you run out of cards, you shuffle your discard pile. So as you're playing through the game and going through your deck of cards, you're continually adding cards to it, and when you reshuffle, you get all those new cards as potential options in your hand. So it's a very fun, light, and interesting way. I've seen some really interesting versions of that game archetype, especially because the hobby has been increasing so rapidly over the last 10-ish years, and gamers have sort of gotten more and more invested into the hobby. There's more interest in taking that style of game and flipping it on its head or adding it to another type of game. So there's a lot of mishing and mashing going on in board games recently. And as a gamer, I love it.
And those deck builders, they like you're saying, the level of intensity, because you can get some that are really, really easy, and then all the way up to some really strategic, like, you gotta keep a lot memorized to keep up with it.
Sure.
And, one of the middle ones, I feel, is probably the Marvel ones that Upper Deck does. That's probably about a mid difficulty level.
Yeah, maybe. Or is that Legendary? Mm-hmm. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Legendary, yeah.
Legendary is a unique one. It's part of, like you mentioned, the Marvel IP, intellectual property. So you get to see all of your favorite superheroes. You get to have them in your deck, and you get to play them against the bad guys. And that's super cool and fun, but there is a bit of strategy to that. And yeah, maybe. I'd say, like, medium weight is a good way of describing that one.
Now, you mentioned Magic the Gathering as being kind of one of the originals of this. And mm-hmm. Now, I recently read a story about a card that someone bought, right? So people take this seriously, like, super seriously.
You have no idea.
So recently someone had a Magic card that they sold on eBay, mm-hmm. right? And how much did they get for that? Do you remember?
I don't personally remember, but I know it was in the thousands, if not the tens of thousands.
I mean, that's just crazy to me that someone would spend that much money for a single card for a game. Like, well, right? I'm not missing something, right?
No, absolutely not. It is, in its own unique way, absurd. I mean, it's about as absurd as someone, you know, paying however many tens of thousands of dollars they paid in order to get William Shatner's toupee from Star Trek. I mean, it's that there's a sense of memorabilia, mm-hmm. because that particular card that you're referencing is an extremely rare card that was printed almost not at all. Like, there was so few printings of that card in existence that because it is so popular, yet it is so rare, that has made it sort of on its own tier of desire for a lot of collectors.
It is the Black Lotus card, which is the rarest Magic the Gathering card in the world, first introduced to the game's original 1993 Alpha set, and initially saw a print run of only 1,100. That's worth about $30,000.
That's crazy!
Yeah.
$30,000 for a little cardboard.
It sold for $27,302 on eBay.
Yeah.
That is a car!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you can buy a car or you can buy a card. You have to, like, that's just nuts.
Yeah.
But that shows you the popularity of the game, that someone is willing to pay that.
Oh, yeah. Magic the Gathering is ridiculous. The popularity that it has garnered is astounding. Mm-hmm. I think it would not be an unfair statement to say that Magic the Gathering by itself is, like, single-handedly responsible for keeping a huge number of local brick-and-mortar hobby shops, like board game places or places for people to go play war games like Warhammer, open.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so popular and so many people play it, and it's such a refined system in terms of how much you have to pay into it in order to stay competitive, that it keeps individual companies open and alive just for featuring that on their shelves.
Mm-hmm.
It's really absurd.
Now, if you want to try out deck building games, you don't have to spend that kind of money, right?
No, not at all.
That might be a turnoff for some people.
Magic,
you can get a full deck. You can get a full game. There's like Penny Arcade, which is a great starter deck builder, which is like, it's an all-in-one game for like $50.
Yeah. That's a lot more manageable.
Yeah. Magic the Gathering is what's called a collectible card game. It's a game where when you want to go buy new cards, you can either buy a particular set of cards that's more or less very strictly monitored, like you will get these cards in this package. Or you can go and get a booster pack, which is a very small package which has some cards, and some of them will be not great, some of them will be good, and one of them will be pretty good. But what cards you get is completely random. Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's collectible is because you're never guaranteed on what card or cards you're going to get.
Like a trading card.
Right, exactly.
Baseball cards.
Yes, but with fantasy creatures and dragons and vampires and magic and all kinds of stuff.
And it's like if baseball cards, and you could use all the stats of a baseball card to build a team and then play those teams.
More or less, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But not every game is a collectible card game.
Like the Penny Arcade I mentioned, it comes with its own set. It's a freestanding game. You can do expansion packs, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to. You can play just that game.
Yes. And honestly, I don't play Magic the Gathering because as a young bachelor just sort of freshly moved into his own new place, I don't have that kind of scratch. That is a lot of money.
Notice how he slides that in there, just letting everyone know. Kevin is single and has his own bachelor pad.
Ladies.
And he doesn't play Magic the Gathering.
I honestly don't know if that is going for me or against me.
I think it depends on the person.
Yeah, that's fair. I've met some pretty swell Magic players, and I've also met some, oh boy, the stereotypical white nerdy dude from South Park level.
Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to let all the ladies out there take a cold shower really quick while we take a break. Because that was some hot and steaminess right there. We're going to talk about more games when we come back. You're listening to We're a Little Behind.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is the place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Summertime is fun time in Northern California. We're Billy and Patrick with your personal invitation to have more fun in a brand new Kia from Renting Kia, your official summertime fun headquarters.
Celebrate this summer with no payments for 90 days in a new 2018 Kia Niro. This sporty 50 mile per gallon crossover hatchback hybrid is showing up everywhere in NorCal.
I've got one. I love it.
And nothing says summer like the 2018 Kia Soul. That's the cool crossover that sits up nice and high, has tons of storage. Like all Kias, it's America's best value. We have a Soul, and it's perfect.
The 2019 all-wheel drive Kia Sorento is here. There's room for your camping gear. It has power for towing and is at home on or off-road.
Get yours today and make no payments until fall.
No cost, lifetime oil changes and tire rotations are yours when you take home your new Kia from Redding Kia, proud sponsor of community events like the Mosquito Serenade.
Finance offer on approval of credit ends 8/10/2018. Redding Kia, reddingkia.com.
If you're looking into a remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio, there's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite and Things.
Now, this is Carl Bott. Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days while Linda and I went on vacation. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard, Estate Granite and Things, or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
KCNR, Free Fire Radio.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
I'm Jen Gomez.
And I'm Kevin Shoemaker.
The man who had no less than 3 marriage proposals on Facebook while we're on break.
I'm not going to lie. This was a first for me.
Yes. Right? They're like they heard enough, man. They were like, all of them just wanted you. Our show is so wide-reaching, and we're like instant matchmaker with that.
Fantastic.
They're like, where have you been hiding this guy?
New dating service.
Exactly.
We're a little behind.
Yeah, exactly. So
we have a bit of a waiting list.
Yes. Oh. So, okay, I'm gonna ask you a question. I warned you during the break that I was going to ask you a question, but I'm like, I'm not going to tell you because I'm going to put you on the spot.
Sure.
I want to get an actual just gut reaction answer.
Sure.
Twister, board game or not? Right?
So, yes and no. Right?
That's because, an answer.
Because there is such a thing as dexterity games. In board games, board gaming is very nerdy. And if there's one thing nerds love to do, speaking is one of them, it's categorizing and making sure that everything sort of fits in its right place.
One of the marriage proposals went away.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you live and learn. I'm really not selling myself as anything other than what I am. So dexterity games are, you know, anything that involves exactly what it might sound like, manual dexterity. And some of those games tend to go on the extreme end of that. So I would say maybe Twister could be an extreme dexterity game that's a little bit more involved than others, but, you know, regardless of whether it's a board game or not, it's a game that I left behind about 100 pounds ago.
Got it.
Well, would you say that, like, party games are a subset of board games, like, you know, Cards Against Humanity and things like that?
Cards Against Humanity.
Absolutely. Party games are a very popular aspect of board games. There's really no genre of board games that I can think of that's more accessible for new people.
Mm-hmm.
Party games are almost always fun, unless if you just really aren't that kind of outgoing personality, in which case some of the more taciturn, thought-provoking, like, Euro-style games. And when I say Euro, I mean European, sort of the original designer games were heavily from Europe, particularly Germany, where they actually got so prolific at making board games, they came up with their own award show.
They're trying to make up for past sins. They're like, guess Germany, guess what we're known for? It's not that, it's board games.
Well, Settlers of Catan was German, right?
Yes.
German game.
Klaus Teuber hails from Germany.
His name's Klaus, so obviously.
Yes. And one of the single biggest board gaming awards, because that is a thing, is the Spiel des Jahres, which is, and I probably butchered that, but it's the German board game award for the sort of biggest and best game that came out that year. And then they have a couple of offshoots. One of which I know is the Kennerspiel des Jahres, which is the best kids game for that year.
And he's multilingual, ladies.
Indeed.
So I think for when it comes to party games, one of the things that the first ones I was really introduced to as a party game, like adult party game, is probably Apples to Apples. And it seems like all other party games since Apples to Apples have all been kind of the same structure. It's the... You pull a card that has a descriptor, you put it down, and then everyone else tries to match the descriptor with the stuff that's in their hand, and the person who played the descriptor card is the judge and then picks the one that they like the best that matches it, and then the judge alternates down the line, and that's kind of how those are. And then, like, Apples to Apples is a very kind of tame one, and then you have, like, Cards Against Humanity, which is very NSFW, so to speak, and then...
Which is not suitable for work, for anyone not aware.
Yeah. And then you have, like, other ones that they're like, oh, well, that seemed to work. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
But Cards Against Humanity is actually an interesting company all on its own. Like, they created this game, and they're comedians and philanthropists. Like, they do they use the money that they make from the games to do a lot of good work, but they're not so far as to not do a good joke with their money either.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, they dug a hole or something? What was that for?
They started... Well, the interesting thing I find about them is that they started out not charging for their game. You could just go to their website, and you could download their game. And granted, you had to print it on your own paper, and then you had to cut the cards out. And then so many people found it so popular, and they found that people were, you know, it was in demand, that they started actually printing it and putting it in a box and selling it, to the point now that you can literally go into Target and buy an empty box.
Yes.
Because they have bigger, so their games come in a black box. And so they have the bigger, blacker box, which is a larger size, but it's empty because they assume you already have the cards to put in it. And because you've
even bigger
expanded.
One's the biggest, blackest box.
Yeah. So, and yeah, like, you're right. They've made so much money
off
of this game.
They bought a small piece of land that had a castle on it, and then everyone who contributed to the game, they then made them king or queen of that castle on that land, so they were the rightful rulers of that land for the span of, like, 3 minutes.
3 minutes, yeah.
For each person.
And everybody got a certificate that said that they were the king and or queen for that 3 minutes, and they were able to come up with laws And so they had, every person had three laws. And so a couple of friends of ours have done that. And so they have certificates with their name, king or queen of this land, and here are their proclamations. And the time, the start time, the end time.
Yeah, and then you had to abdicate the throne at that time.
Yeah.
This is a beautiful land, and we shall call it this land.
Yes.
Yeah, they're a fun, interesting company. Yeah, they raised money to dig a hole, and then they filled the hole back in.
I think it was for something. There was a purpose for that. Like, I love the fact that they
were raising money for a purpose, but the hole was just a symbolic, hey, let's just do something. Yeah. You know, if you donate money to us, we'll dig another hole, or we'll dig this hole a little deeper. And
well, they're mischief makers too.
They are.
Like, I mean, they literally bought a strip of land on the Mexican United States border. And so when the wall gets built, they're going to have to go all the way around their land.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that just for fun to make the wall even longer.
Another game that they're rather well known for, at least nowadays, is a game called Secret Hitler, which is exactly what it sounds like. One of the people at the table is secretly Hitler during the fascist regime in Germany, since we were just talking about that not too long ago. I think it was one of their big sort of publicity stunts was that they sent a free copy of Secret Hitler to all of the members of Congress.
Oh my goodness!
I believe that is a story. Don't take me at face value on that, but I do remember reading something about that and finding it absolutely hilarious.
Wow. Well, you know, a game that you introduced us to that has been kind of a staple at our game nights is called Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yes.
And this game is very interesting, not just for the game itself, but kind of the whole reality based around the game. So can you give kind of an explanation of what Sentinels of the Multiverse is?
So there were these two gentlemen named Christopher Bedell and Adam Rebotero, and they were friends for a very long time, and they loved telling stories, and particularly stories about comics, comic book characters. They were very big fans of comics and superheroes and the types of stories that they could tell with those characters. So over the years, they just kept coming up with all these different ideas for stories and all these cool characters and the ways that they could interact with one another. And at one point, sort of looking at the state of the board game market, they just decided to partner up with another friend of theirs. I believe his name is Eric Bender. And they just decided, you know what, why not? Here's this kickstarting platform, you know, we can try and crowdfund some money and see if we can get a board game about superheroes made. And they did, and it was called Sentinels of the Multiverse, and it was awesome. So they decided to keep going with it, and they kept kickstarting it and coming up with more and more expansions. And I caught on to that game. It released in 2011, and I caught on to it in like 2013, 2014, sort of when it was sort of in the middle of its run as it stands now, because they have finally made the last expansion for it. for some reason, they decided that this game that they were making was going to be a story 7 years in the making, and so the last expansion is going to be coming out sometime in the next month or so, I think, publicly. But for people like me who backed it on Kickstarter, they'll be receiving their copies of it a little sooner, sometime very soon, hopefully. Yeah, it's insane how much detail they put into it for just, like, a card game. 'Cause it's not just, oh, here's a card game with, you know, this card does that. It has artwork that features the characters in certain scenarios that sort of pertain to whatever the title of the card is. But then there's also flavor text, that is to say, little blurbs at the bottom of each card that give you some of the flavor, if you will, the fun of the game, the universe that they exist in, sort of an idea into that character's personality or the way that the stories get told. And I didn't realize it until a couple years into playing it, but those two guys in particular, Adam and Christopher, are madmen. because they decided to cram in so much almost needless detail, because you can compare quotes. The text at the bottom of those cards, that flavor text, are quotes from comics that don't exist.
Right, and they even say, like, issue number whatever.
Yes, this is a quote from The Wraith in Freedom 5, number 64.
And that's not a thing.
That does not exist. It is a comic book that does not exist. But they went even further beyond that, because they created not just a fictional comic book universe, complete with its own straight-from-the-beginning-to-the-end timeline, but then they also created the metafictional world that Sentinels the comics exist in. So it's like someone not just making up Marvel Comics, but making up our world to support why Marvel Comics is the way that it is.
Wow.
So, for those of you who don't know, they were releasing some new items into this, and they were releasing weird hidden clues. And Kevin came over to our house one day, and he told us about the time that he's how many hours did you stay up? It felt like you were like it was days of minimal to no sleep. And they were like giving hidden clues. He was all over the internet. He was finding all this. He was explaining to us like he was a beautiful minding this thing. I was like, okay, first of all, put down the dry erase marker. That's my bay window. Secondly, you need sleep. And he's like, but it's coming out, and it's this, and if you look at this, it's got this upside down number. And then he's like, and then they found this, and yeah, it was quite intense. So these people put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you're describing is it's called an ARG. It's called an alternate reality game. It's a very silly title for basically a real life Easter egg hunt. It all starts with this one very small clue, and then sort of on a website they tease, like, here's an interpretation of that clue, why don't you guys go do this and see what happens? And then you go to that website, you do a couple of clicking on things, and then you copy and paste some text into the search bar, and, oh no, here's a new thing.
It's kind of like a amped-up version of an old text-based game, it sounds like.
Kind of, but like if you were inside of that text game, you know, where you have to sort of like do all of the sleuthing yourself. And as it sort of continued to spiral out of control, you know, you had people who were looking in the code of images that they would find on a website and finding that it sends them, that if you recreate it in a different way, it's a link to a YouTube video that plays in Morse code, which then when you translate the Morse code, it is itself Morse code that you then need to translate again in order to get the actual message. It was bonkers.
This is what I'm talking about.
My brain hurts.
Okay, so while Kevin was giving the explanation about Sentinels in the Multiverse, I was still going back on that Cards Against Humanity because I wanted to know what that hole was about.
Mm-hmm.
That hole was literally about nothing.
Okay.
So what happened was they do holiday stunts.
Mm-hmm.
And the holiday stunt for 2016, Cards Against Humanity, had people send them money, and they would dig a hole. The money went to dig the hole. That's all it was. So there was an NPR interview regarding this. And so I'm going to read you this interview.
Okay.
It's not long, because they had more questions for Cards Against Humanity, and this is what they got. Question, what's happening here? Answer, Cards Against Humanity is digging a holiday hole. Question, is this real? Answer, unfortunately, it is. Question, where is the hole? Answer, America, and in our hearts. Question, is there some sort of deeper meaning or purpose to the hole? Answer, no. Question, what do I get for contributing money to the hole? Answer, a deeper hole. What else are you going to buy, an iPod? Question, why aren't you giving all this money to charity? Answer, why aren't you giving all this money to charity? It's your money. Question, is the hole bad for the environment? Answer, no. This was just a bunch of empty land. Now there's a hole there. That's life. Question, how am I supposed to feel about this? Answer, you're supposed to think it's funny. You might not get it for a while, but sometime next year you'll chuckle quietly to yourself and remember all this business about the hole. Question, how deep can you make this sucker? Answer, great question. As long as you keep spending, we'll keep digging. We'll find out together how deep this thing goes. Question, What if you dig so deep you hit magma? Answer, at least we'll feel something.
Wow.
And that is the interview.
Yeah, they, yes, stunts is really the only appropriate mm-hmm. word for what they do, because they just kind of do bizarre, weirdo things.
One year, they celebrated Hanukkah, and they were sending all their backers eight sensible gifts. Mm-hmm. So they, like, one day they sent socks. And so all of their backers got a pair of socks in the mail. And then I think another day it was pens. It was, like, all very boring, but, you know.
Sensible gifts. 8 days of it.
8 days of it. But so
I think one of them was an expansion pack.
Yeah, probably. But just quickly back to Sentinels, because you mentioned the artwork. Mm-hmm. And I just want to let our listeners know that you yourself are a piece of artwork from Sentinels of the Multiverse.
In a way.
And we can share that picture if you're okay with that.
Oh, absolutely.
On our website, because as the group of friends we are, we're all very close. One of our friends, Chelsea, who has been on our show quite a bit.
They've heard. They know. They know she's intense.
Yes. Came up with the idea to contact the makers of Sentinels of the Multiverse.
She's awesome.
She emailed them and said, hey, my friend's a really big fan. Will you draw a picture of him as one of your Sentinels? And they said, sure. And so now you have your own Sentinels of the Multiverse card as Kevin the Pun Killer.
Yes, and the story behind that is long and strange and bizarre. But suffice to say that it is probably my favorite thing that I own. I mean, it's not like they did it for free. The artist did commission it.
It was commissioned and it was paid for.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But
trust me, it was.
But otherwise, yes, it is. It's a picture of me in tights and a cape with, like, gloves.
No.
Well, it's a trench coat rather than a cape.
Trench coat. They wouldn't, because, like, at Nimone, no capes.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know if trench coats would really be all that much more suited.
You can cinch them up when you need to.
It is flying out behind you as though a cape.
Yes, it is very billowy. Suffice to say that I look a lot better in tights as a cartoon than I do as a human. But it's really cool.
Oh, and there went another one of those marriage proposals.
It'll be replaced. So, yeah, we'll make sure we get that up on the website. And so this is how all the cards look. This is the style of artwork, and that's what it looks like, and it's awesome.
Yeah. So we are going to take another break. You are listening to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
I'm Jen Gomez.
And I'm Kevin Shoemaker.
The Pun Killer.
Dun, dun, dun.
You're listening to We're a Little Behind.
You know, this time of year in Shasta County, the need to heat your home is probably the last thing on your mind, right? Well, my friend SSD Oil says this is the ideal time to trade in your old monitor heater on a spanking new Toyotomi and save yourself up to $250. Your qualifying model monitor heater earns you a huge allowance on a Toya stove that will keep you warm and cozy all winter long. This deal is as hot as a Redding sidewalk in summer. SSD Oil, 241-1167, 241-1167.
This is Diane Hawks with the Address Realty and KCNR. I've been racking my brain trying to figure out how I could be of assistance to some of the car fire victims. So, I would like to donate 25% of my commissions to 4 families who have lost their homes in this horrific fire and wish to relocate in Shasta County. Even if you haven't yet received your settlement, you could call me now to reserve your commissions. Call Diane at 530-227-6401.
Yeah, you'll stop. I have the right-of-way. Or will he? Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision Repair. Don't count on it. He or she might be texting, changing the station on the radio, or breaking up a fight in the back seat. Don't take that chance. Lives are at stake. Distracted driving is a danger to us all. You can be proactive in preventing an accident. There's not much you can do when you're sitting in your car and they back into your door. If this happens to you, come see us. We're located at the south end of East Side Road just before Gervin. With your claim number, we can handle your entire claim process. Our quality repairs and friendly service will have you recommending Coachmaster to all your friends and families. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce, and in 2000 I opened the House of Conscious Living Yoga. We offer a variety of styles attending to the needs of all students. Our faculty consists of yoga therapists and health professionals. Conscious Living Yoga meets each student right where they are, and safety is always a priority. We offer weekly classes, class series, and workshops in addition to private sessions. Visit ConsciousLivingYoga.com for the online schedule, costs, and other interesting information.
If it's someone who has something to say about the North State, you'll hear it here.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
I'm Jen Gomez.
And I'm Kevin Shoemaker.
And we're talking about games.
Board games.
Yes, not video games. We're for the young whippersnappers. We're talking about good old... hold it in your hand, pieces, board games.
Tangible games.
Where you gotta look the people in the eye when you make fun of them instead of speaking into a microphone. Says
like
the
it.
Guy speaking
into a microphone.
Anyway.
So, there was a bit of an interesting bit in the last little session here, mm-hmm. in the last little segment, where you... posed a question to me, mm-hmm. so I feel it's only fair, since it is my turn now,
okay.
that I pose a question not just to you, but to the both of you, my
okay.
lovely hosts. So I know how I got into board gaming, and I think I know how you guys got into board gaming, because I think I may or may not have been the impetus behind that.
Probably.
But I also know how I, like, what it is that I most appreciate about board games, but I'm very curious to know what you guys think, because I have always been about these incredibly nerdy things, you know, video games and all of these fantasy stories and all of these sort of interesting concepts and strategies.
We have a pop culture radio show, Kevin. If you want to call us nerds, we're fine.
No, it's fine. But so it kind of makes sense for me to be super into them. Okay. But you guys have been playing for... 5-ish years now, so...
I think even longer than that.
7, maybe?
Well, these particular... I mean, I've always played games, and I actually played Settlers of Catan so much, I couldn't stand it for years.
Yes,
I'm finally back to the point where I think I want to play it again.
Yeah.
I saw an advertisement for a game that looked like it. It wasn't it, but it was similar, and I was like, oh, yeah, Settlers. I haven't played that in a while. I should try that again. But The thing I like most about the games is it's kind of two things. One, I like that it brings people together. I mean, our little group of friends is a really good example because we get together for game night. And, you know, we just had one this past weekend and we hadn't had one in months. And it's just really fun to get together and do something with your friends. And I like that the majority of the games we play are cooperative and it's not super competitive. Or if it does get competitive, it's still fun. Like we don't hate each other by the time we're done with the game. But I also like that these kind of games give you a sense of accomplishment. Like you solved the puzzle or you figured out the riddle or, you know, you somehow used your strategy to succeed at the game. And it's a very fulfilling, you know, event. Like, yes, I did that. That's something that I've done and I've accomplished.
Wonderful answer, Christopher.
I've been into games, not the designer ones, but ever since I was a kid, my mom used to get me games all the time. She used to go to like thrift stores and get like even old games that they just don't make anymore. I mean, we've had Happy Days games.
I loved that game.
She used to get them all. I've played all different types of games. But once you and I started hanging out, then playing all those designer games, I liked those. I liked the level of intensity to them to where it feels like, yeah, like you said, the most of them are games of chance in some of those, you know, store-bought kid games or whatever. And I like the fact that these, like some of the best ones, Ticket to Ride, which is where you plot out your where you're putting your trains on the map and you're trying to get the longest route and all that. It's a lot of thought process.
I think of all the games we play, that one gets the most intense with us.
And that one's weird because if it's like a three-player game, it's kind of intense. If it's a four-player game, it's usually really easy. And then you get five players and it's pretty much murder. And then I like and see, you're the more Jen's more of the cooperative. I'm more of the all-for-one type one. I like the one where I can win. I think it's why I like Lords of Waterdeep, which is technically it's a Dungeons & Dragons game, but it's a board game based on that, and but it has really not much to do with Dungeons & Dragons other than character-wise.
Yeah, don't have to know the lore or know the rules of D&D in order to play it.
I like the gameplay style of that one. I like being able to plot out and think that how I can outsmart others. Mm-hmm. I just do. And I like the games where you lie or you deceive and, you know, you play something that you're not. Jen absolutely hates those games because she thinks she can't lie very well.
I like the one we played this weekend, which was Balderdash, because I don't actually have to say what I'm lying about. I just write it down on a piece of paper and someone else has to read it.
Yes.
So that's fine.
Yeah. Social deduction games, yes, the type of games that you're describing, goes all the way back to, like, you know, when kids play Heads Up 7-Up in school or Mafia or Werewolf. Those are the types of games that are very sort of deeply entrenched in social deduction. But, yeah, part of the love that I have for board games is just how much of a breadth of things there are to explore.
Yeah.
There are so many different types. There are so many different genres. There are so many different themes. There are so many different games that are appropriate for, you know, kids or adults or, you know, anywhere in between. I really feel like it's worth it if you are at all interested in having sort of an activity. If you want to get together with family or with friends, or if you just kind of want an excuse to get around the table and hang out with one another, board games work for that, and I love them for that. And the fact that I can simultaneously be with my friends while we're all engaged on a singular thing that we all get to participate in and feel like we're accomplishing together, or at least participating together in, that's huge.
Well, and I like games that also have a tie-in to other pop culture things. Or, like, you know, we have Munchkin is a great game.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a pretty gritty, not gritty, great and easy, somehow turned into gritty.
Crazy?
Card game that you can get into, and it's got very simple rules, but they have tie-ins. There's also Flux, which has, like, a variation for all different things, everything from Firefly to Batman, the animated series. There's all these different ones, and I think another great version of that is the TV show Rick and Morty. There's now is it Protozoic? I think is the producer, the game, the company that puts out these games. And there's all these, they're all tied into episodes. So you have a whole game based on an episode of Rick and Morty. So there's like all these different games, and you can tie them into episodes of the show.
Cryptozoic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had to think about that one.
Okay, I was close.
You were very close.
So if you're in the Reading area and you are interested in maybe trying any of them or picking anyone up, we're gonna give a shout out to our local store here. It's Matrix Cards and Games, which is over on Hilltop Drive. It's in the Hillcrest Shopping Center with Country Kitchen and the Champa Gardens and the FedEx store. And anyway, they are a great resource because they have tons of games there that you can just go in and play.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to commit to spending $50 on a game. you can try a lot of them that are already there.
And then they have a lot of the games that we've been talking about today. And they're a great locally owned business, so yay, local business. And just head on in there, and they've got tons of fun games. So, you know, if you've never tried a designer game, you know, give them a shot. Head in there, and the staff is really friendly, and if you have any questions, they'd be able to answer
it. Quick answer, yeah, they're great about that.
Yeah, we love going in there, Kevin. I know you go there a lot. And
at least once a week these days, yeah. Mostly every Sunday.
Yeah, so we have like less than a minute. We are going to cut out of here quick. Is there a recommendation that you have for people who are starting now? I'll give you a rapid fire quick.
Ticket to Ride is one of the best intro games ever, and King of Tokyo is also a great one. It's Yahtzee, but with Godzilla.
There you go. I love it. Make sure you check out our website at gomezcast.com for links and pictures of Kevin.
Yay! Yeah, so those are great recommendations. Go to Matrix on Hilltop Drive here in Reading. Do that thing.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Gomez.
I'm Jen Gomez.
And I'm Kevin Shoemaker.
And you've been listening to We're a Little Behind.
Good night.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Reading, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Reading. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.